When it comes to commercial banking, relationships matter. At Associated Bank, we've got you. With a dedicated team of relationship managers helping you secure financing to best serve you today and tomorrow. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
Let's begin with Thought Leader Wednesday. Moved up again from tomorrow because we're off. Wayne Janis here, president of financial planning practice at Whitnall, is with us, an affiliate of Associated Bank. Wayne, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing on this Thanksgiving week?
Yes, doing very well. I can't wait for some turkey. I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the other things we're looking forward to, and we're glad you're here, is the year end. I mean, we're all getting ready for doing our taxes the new way. With the new tax law, just before we get into some of the details of some of the stuff we're going to talk about, give us a sense of how significant this is in terms of change, in terms of things that we're not going to be seeing that we've been used to, that sort of thing.
Well, it's the biggest major tax change that I've seen in the last 25 years. And so when you look at what's happened, there's huge amounts of things that have been eliminated, such as home equity loans, things like investment advisory fees, the cost of paying your accountant to prepare tax returns. A big one, moving expenses, which used to be a deduction. Now, anybody that moved to change jobs, they were able to deduct the cost of the move. All of those things and more have been eliminated. And in their stead, the government has raised the standard deduction to $24,000, so that for some people, the amount of benefit they'll get by getting those free deductions of $24,000 will offset the loss of the other deductions. Probably not so much for homeowners with high real estate taxes, because they weren't eliminated, but they were capped at $10,000. So if your state income tax withholding is 9 and your real estate taxes are 12, that's 21. You put that into a basket, and all you get to deduct out of that 21 is 10.
For single people, that's $12,000, right? The deduction.
Yes.
Is, and then 24 for married. Lots of things that you've mentioned there are changing. Have you found a really good source? And you're obviously our source here, but as people get into the nitty-gritty of this, where's a good place for people to go and kind of figure out exactly what's going to happen to them?
Well, you go online. If you have things that you're concerned about, there's huge amounts of resources online. And if you're working with a firm like Fidelity or Vanguard or Schwab, they have tremendous resources within their websites. The AICPA has a website, and there's all kinds of ways to tap into information, almost more than you can handle.
Yeah, it is for some overwhelming, but you just got to put your nose to the grind and do it. So we're happy you're here today to talk about some specific things. And people listening today, this is sort of free advice, so get a pen and paper. We want to talk about year-end distributions with mutual funds, and there's some scenarios there where this could be kind of tricky. Tell us about it.
If you own a mutual fund, even if you don't sell the mutual fund, if you hold on to it, if the mutual fund has been selling shares along the way, they could have generated within inside the fund gains. And at the end of the year, they send you a 1099 saying, oh, here, surprise, here's a 1099 that shows that you're going to have $3,000 of dividend income and $15,000 capital gain distribution. Now, the reason that that's troubling to me, because I've done a lot of work with all of our clients to figure out who could be negatively impacted by this, and we ended up remodeling 50 clients' portfolios to avoid this trap, because what's the problem? If you bought this mutual fund that has a 20% capital gain distribution this year. So let's say you put $20,000 in the fund in July. And today, because the market has corrected since July, the U.S. market was down 9% in October, your $20,000 might be worth $16,000. So you've experienced an unrealized loss of $4,000. The fund sends you a 1099 saying that you have $4,000 of capital gain income. Mm. You have an economic loss.
Yeah.
And so if you don't know this, then you're going to file your tax return and say, I've lost money in this fund, but I have to pay taxes on somebody else's gain because that stock was bought years ago and the fund just got around to selling it this year, and I've got to pay tax on gains that occurred before I bought the fund.
Wow.
So you need to, for one thing, a lot of the fund distributions are happening this month. In fact, the ones we did on October 28th, there's a, I won't give the name, but there's a fund that's distributing 20% gains on the fund, and the fund dropped 10% in value the prior month, but it's still distributing a 20% gain. You do not want to buy that fund until after they make that distribution. If you own that fund and you have little to no gain, or worse yet, a loss in it, you want to sell that fund now and buy it back if you like it the day after it goes ex-dividend, which is November 28th. After November 28th, it's too late to get out of this. So some funds, it's November. Some, it's December 31st. So all of that information is available from the fund advisor you have, whether it's a Vanguard or a T. Rowe Price or Dodge & Cox. Whoever the fund manager is has an estimate of the amount of capital gains you can expect from their fund. It's available on their websites. So you should look at that, and if you own a fund like that that's going to trigger gains, and it's most likely to occur with people that own U.S. stock funds, because foreign stock funds, the world index dropped 15% over the past year. There's not a lot of gain distributions coming out of foreign mutual funds that buy foreign securities or emerging market securities. There's a lot of gains, huge gains coming from funds that bought U.S. stocks. They've been on a 5 or 6 year upward swing, and they're recognizing those gains. But as I pointed out, the markets drop back, and if you bought that fund at the high price and you now have a loss in the fund, you should sell it and take the loss, avoid the big distribution in November, and if you like the fund, buy it back in January.
You called this a trap. For people who don't have a financial planner, somebody like you in their corner, I could see how this could possibly be overlooked.
Oh, it is. For many people, they're going to find out about this trap
next April
when it's too late to fix it.
Yeah.
So it'll happen when they get their 1099 and they give the information to their CPA, or they do their own tax return and say, wait a minute, I lost money in this fund. Why am I going to pay tax on this? So, but you know what you own, even if you don't have an outside advisor. If you look at what you own and you bought a fund from Vanguard or T. Rowe Price or Dodge & Cox or some other firm, you can get access to their website and you can find out whether it's going to be distributing a capital gain within the next 2 weeks or 6 weeks, as the case may be. Some funds will be distributing the end of November. Some will be distributing at the end of December.
Is this a unique situation to this year, or is this been something that has been a trap, as you've called it, for years past? Like, or is it just unique to the market conditions this year?
Well, this gets into some of the subtleties of how this is done, but the trap has existed in the past. But if you remember, through Armageddon, when the market crashed in 07, 08, and 09, many of the mutual funds had gigantic billion-dollar losses. And when they took those losses because people were scared and they were selling out of their funds, so they were selling them at these gigantic losses, these mutual funds had massive capital loss carryovers. So as they were experiencing gains in 11 and 12 and 13, they weren't distributing gains because they had this massive carryover, which could be used to offset their fund gains. That party's over. All of these funds now have exhausted their capital loss carryovers, and now they are distributing a lot of gains this year. There was some last year, not quite as dramatic. This year, it's much more dramatic. When you start looking at it, you say, oh, my God, we got to think about what we have to do here for our clients. And like I said, for 50 clients, we sold out of their funds, and we're either going to wait with the cash until after the fund distribution, or we'll buy a comparable fund that's already distributed its gains, or we'll buy or just sit in cash for 30 days.
It sounds like it's easy to remember that these distributions happen in November and in December. So if you have one of these funds, just maybe block it away in your mind to always check this in November and December.
That would be a good rule of thumb, especially now that, as I said, the capital loss carryovers have been exhausted. And all the funds, if they're distributing gains now, that's going to continue to happen in the future. It may change the way you think about investing in funds.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, instead of buying mutual funds, they buy exchange-traded funds, which rarely distribute a capital gain.
Of course, the solution to this is let's not have the markets go into correction territory like they did this year. That would solve it too, right?
You know, if you look at the last 100 years of the stock market, we have averaged 125% drop every 4 years.
Mm.
So it's unrealistic to believe we're not going to get one.
Yeah. Let's talk about something that we had a conversation about before. Again, this goes with the tax year changes. Alimony and the tax credit or tax avoidance that once was there with alimony is gone now, isn't it?
Well, it was interesting. When you and I spoke about this some time ago, we talked about that change, and I was happy that they didn't make the change effective December of last year, because people that were negotiating divorces would have little or no time to affect a change prior to the date. So that was one of the very few changes that they made effective at the end of this year. So this change in the law that removes alimony as an income tax deduction occurs for divorces that are finalized after December 31st of this year. And what is the change? Well, in the past, if you're paying alimony to someone, you got to deduct it. The person to whom you're paying the alimony has to pay tax on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd say, well, that seems like it's an equal set. I mean, but it isn't, because I've never seen a case when this didn't happen, but it's always been the person in the higher tax bracket with the higher income that has to pay the alimony to the person in the lower bracket. In some cases, if it's a stay-at-home parent, then the income is zero, and so any income paid to that person starts being taxed at the lowest possible levels. So the government looked at this as a way of creating revenue. If you're in a 40% bracket and you get to pay alimony, you lose that 40% deduction. So $10,000 of alimony used to cost you six. Now it'll cost you 10.
Mm.
The person receiving it, they got the 10, would have to pay tax at 20%, so they got to keep 8. So it cost you 6, and the recipient got 8. Well, the government made this change as a revenue enhancer, because they figured out the math. By doing this, the family pays more tax. You take away the $4,000 benefit, and you give back the $2,000 credit on one side, they come up 100% better in tax. So if you're the recipient, you might naively say, well, I'll wait and I'll put off this divorce and not sign the papers until January, because I won't have to pay tax on the money. But if I was the payer, I'd tell my lawyer, look, right now it cost me $6,000 to pay my ex $10,000. Next year it's going to cost me $10,000. So I'm not about to pay her $10,000 anymore. I'm going to pay her something much less. Because the government, by taking away that tax benefit, has shrunken the pie. And so you're going to get a slice of a smaller pie.
Yeah.
So don't believe you're going to get the same alimony you got when it was deductible to the payor, because that's not going to happen.
Divorces are already messy. It seems like this is just going to make it even more messy.
That's the problem, because when you're talking about two people getting divorced, it's rare that they're talking to each other, and it's the lawyers that are talking to each other, and there's so much built up emotions and negative feelings that it's hard to come up with the right answer to do to avoid the family or the former family from having to pay more taxes. So, but I would say to you that, you know, if you do it this year, the chances of being able to have a bigger pot to split, well, definitely exist versus waiting till next year when nobody gets a deduction and nobody pays tax on the income, but it's very possible the amount of tax you're paying on the income is 20% or even 15%.
Wayne, I also want to talk to you about something, and we touched on this at the beginning. You mentioned the changes coming for home equity, taxes, property taxes, mortgage interest. A concept that you, and we talked about this one of the last times you were in, is bunching deductions for some of these things. What do you mean by bunching deductions?
Well, since the rules of the game have changed, most people are left with just a few deductions. They don't get miscellaneous itemized. They don't get to deduct most of their taxes. They have a limit on how much mortgage interest they can deduct. They've taken away home equity loans, unless the home equity loan was used to improve the house. So,
and then it's still deductible.
Then it is still deductible. Yeah. So it isn't the name home equity. It's a home equity loan that you use to pay your kids' college tuition, or home equity loan that you've used to buy a car or to pay your income tax. None of those are deductible. Home equity loans that are used to improve your home are deductible, provided the total amount of debt on your home does not exceed the new limit of $750,000. Once it goes beyond that, neither the mortgage, any increase in the mortgage, nor any increase in a home equity loan is deductible beyond the $750,000. So the bunching of deductions is kind of a new concept, because if you can deduct charitable, you can deduct mortgage interest, you can deduct up to $10,000 in taxes. What else do people have? Generally, they don't have enough medical expenses to deduct them, because there's a phase out of the medical deduction based on income. So unless you have a really large amount of medical that are uninsured, most people don't have large deductions for medical. But that's one that was left. So they've got real estate, they got $10,000 of taxes. They've got mortgage interest, and they got charitable. If the total of those deductions for a married couple is $24,000 or less, none of them saves them any taxes. They get zero benefit from all the deductions they paid, because the government is giving you $24,000 for free. Or if you're 65 years old, you and your spouse, $26,600 they get. So if you have paid off your mortgage and all you have, or you've got a small mortgage where your taxes are 10 and your mortgage is only $4,000 or $5,000, and you're giving $5,000 or $6,000 a year to your church and other charities, and you're 21, how do you get to 24? Well, the answer to that is what I've done for many clients that are in this situation that won't be able to get any benefit out of their itemized deductions, including their charitable deductions, for, well, until 2026, when the law reverts back to the old law. What I've done is I've had them donate the money to one of these donor advised funds that Vanguard, Schwab, Fidelity, the funds have, where you put in 5 years' worth of your deductions. If you give $5,000 a year to charity, or $6,000 a year to charity, put in $30,000 into the fund. That, coupled with your $10,000 deduction, puts you over the $24,000. So you get to deduct thousands of dollars of contributions that you won't be able to deduct if you wait to do it every year over the next five.
Hmm.
Then the fund has this $30,000 sitting over at Schwab or Fidelity, Vanguard, or others. And every year, you take $5,000 out of that fund and give it to your charity. So you've pre-funded your church, but you haven't given it to your church. You've given it to this conduit. They call it a donor-advised fund, which allows you to take a deduction for all of it up front and then peel it off over the next 5 years. It's sort of like having a mini family foundation.
Does that fund make money while that money's there? Or just,
the interesting thing about this is that it could make money or it could lose money.
Ooh.
But the choice is yours. You could put it into treasuries and assure yourself you're not going to lose money.
Mm-hmm.
You could put it into a money market and assure you're not going to lose money. Or you could buy stocks with it, you know, like you buy mutual funds with it, which means you can make money or lose money.
Yeah.
So I leave mine in a money market account, because I'm not going to gamble on what I'm going to give to the charity, so that stocks could go up, but they could go down. So, but that's the way, that's the bunching. Now, if you have a person that also has huge medical expenses, and they have a way of combining them in 1 year, that they've already paid a bunch of them this year, but they still owe $8,000 or $10,000 of medical expense that they're going to pay next year. Well, now they've exceeded the limit. They should make sure they got all of those bills paid before the end of the year. And we see this typically with older people that have, they might be living in nursing homes. They've got high costs, but if the bill might be due on January 1st. You don't wait till January 1st. You pay it December 31st.
Yeah, right.
And you get to bunch the medical deductions into a year where you can push yourself beyond the $24,000 standard and therefore get real tax benefit for everything you've paid beyond the 24 which if you wait, goes into a following year, we don't get above the 24,000. You never get above the 24,000. So the key is to try to bunch them into a year and then get some benefit that you otherwise will not get.
It'll be interesting to see, and I know I mentioned this before about charities and charitable giving, whether those organizations are going to suffer because of this new law. It kind of feels like they will. What are your thoughts on that? That we won't be able to donate as much as
I'm involved in two or three, and I'm seeing some softness there. But nothing dramatic at this point. But when you think about this, no people that donate money got to deduct them all the way through April when they filed the return last year. When are they going to find out that they didn't save any money from their contributions?
Yeah.
Probably when they filed their tax return and realized they didn't save any money because they were below the standard. So the possibility of this having a negative impact is there. If nothing else, it raises the cost of your charitable deduction. Because if in the past you didn't have a $24,000 standard and you could deduct the $5,000 you gave to charity and it saved you $2,000 in income tax by doing it, the charitable cost was $3,000. If you give the $5,000 now and you're in the standard, that $5,000 saves you $0.
Yeah.
So it increased the cost from $3,000 to $5,000, which is, what, a 60% increase in the cost of your contribution. So but it's not just contributions where this applies. It's paying your real estate tax bills, where you used to be able to deduct them.
Right.
Now you can't. So there's a lot of places where the cost of owning a home has gone up dramatically because of the loss of the real estate tax deductions and the elimination and the capping of the mortgage. Now, there's not a lot of people that go beyond 750 on the mortgages. I mean, there are probably thousands of them, but not
right.
millions of them. But for the thousands that are above the 750, it will dramatically increase the cost of owning a home.
Yeah. Wayne, always good stuff. We look forward to getting into more of this with you when you're back again. How can people have this conversation one-on-one with you if they have questions or want to just pick your brain about stuff?
Well, I think the last time I was here, I gave you my email. I can give you my office phone number, which is 630-575-2309. And if you have questions, you can run them past me. And if if there's complications that I can't handle, I'll tell you. I can handle most tax questions, but if there's one of the things that you have to be careful about when you're giving advice is to know everything, the big picture, not to just see a piece of the puzzle without seeing the whole puzzle.
Yeah, that's why it's probably worth a sit-down with you if they're really concerned.
More likely, I wouldn't give advice unless I know the big picture because you can make a really bad mistake by just seeing a part of the puzzle.
Good stuff. Wayne, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Stephen.
Wayne Janis, president of the financial planning practice at Whitnell, an affiliate of Associated Bank, our thought leader today. Remember, our thought leader conversations are usually on Thursday. Again, we moved it up this week because of Thanksgiving. You can find more online at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. And head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to learn more about our thought leaders and to hear more conversations there.